Chapter 2. The fuddled young husband stared for a few seconds at this unexpected praise of his wife, half in doubt of the wisdom of his own attitude towards the possessor of such qualities. But he speedily lapsed into his former conviction, and said harshly, "Well then, now is your chance. I am open to an offer for this gem o' creation." She turned to her husband and murmured, "Michael, you have talked this nonsense in public places before. A joke is a joke, but you may make it once too often, mind. I know I've said it before, I meant it. All I want is a buyer." At the moment a swallow, one among the last of the season, which had by chance found its way through an opening into the upper part of the tent, flew to and from quick curves above their heads, causing all eyes to follow it absently. And watching the bird till it made its escape, the assembled company neglected to respond to the workman's offer, and the subject dropped. But a quarter of an hour later the man, who had gone on lacing his furmity more and more heavily, though he was either so strong-minded or such an intrepid toper, that he still appeared fairly sober, recurred to the old strain, as in a musical fantasy the instrument fetches up the original theme. "Here I am waiting to know about this offer of mine. The woman is no good to me. Who'll have her?" The company had by this time decidedly degenerated, and the renewed inquiry was received with a laugh of appreciation. The woman whispered. She was imploring, and anxious, come, it is getting dark, and this nonsense won't do. If you don't come along, I shall go without you. Come." She waited and waited, yet he did not move. In 10 minutes the man broke in upon the desultory conversation of the furmity drinkers with, "Asked this question, and nobody answered to T. Will any Jack Rag or Tom Straw money buy my goods?" The woman's manner changed, and her face assumed the grim shape and color, of which mention has been made. Mike, she said, "this is getting serious." "Oh, too serious. Will anybody buy her?" said the man. "I wish somebody would," said she firmly. "Her present owner is not at all to her liking." "Nor you to mine," said he. "Oh, we are agreed about that. Gentlemen, you hear? It's an agreement to part. She shall take the girl, if she wants to, and go her ways. I'll take my tools, and go my ways. 'Tis simple as scripture history. Now then, stand up, Susan, and show yourself." "Don't, my cheel," whispered a buxom stainless dealer in voluminous petticoats, who sat near the woman. "Yer good man don't know what he's saying." The woman, however, did stand up. "Ow, who's auctioneer?" cried the hay trusser. "I be," promptly answered a short man, with a nose resembling a copper knob, a damp voice, and eyes like buttonholes. "Who'll make an offer for this lady?" The woman looked on the ground, as if she maintained her position by a supreme effort of will. 5 shillings, said someone, at which there was a laugh. "No insults," said the husband. "Who'll say a guinea?" Nobody answered, and the female dealer in stalluses interposed. "Behave yourself, moral, good man, for heaven's love. Ah, what a cruelty is the poor soul married to. Bed and board is dear at some figures, pon my vacant is. Set it higher, auctioneer," said the trusser. 2 guineas, said the auctioneer, and no one replied. "If they don't take her for that, in 10 seconds they'll have to give more," said the husband. "Very well. Now auctioneer, add another." 3 guineas going for 3 guineas, said the roomy man. "No bid?" said the husband. "Good Lord, why she's cost me 50 times the money, if a penny. Go on." 4 guineas, cried the auctioneer. "I'll tell ye what I won't sell her for less than 5, said the husband, bringing down his fist, so that the basins danced. "I'll sell her for 5 guineas to any man, that will pay me the money, and treat her well, and he shall have her forever, and never hear aught o' me. But she shan't go for less. Now then, 5 guineas and she's yours. Susan, you agree?" She bowed her head with absolute indifference. 5 guineas, said the auctioneer, "or she'll be withdrawn, Do anybody give it? The last time. Yes or no? Yes, said a loud voice from the doorway. All eyes were turned. Standing in the triangular opening which formed the door of the tent was a sailor, who, unobserved by the rest, had arrived there within the last 2 or 3 minutes. A dead silence followed his affirmation. You say you do? Asked the husband, staring at him. I say so, replied the sailor. Saying is one thing, and paying is another. Where's the money? The sailor hesitated a moment, looked anew at the woman, came in, unfolded 5 crisp pieces of paper, and threw them down upon the tablecloth. They were Bank of England notes for £5. Upon the face of this, he clinked down the shillings severally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The sight of real money in full amount, in answer to a challenge for the same till then deemed slightly hypothetical, had a great effect upon the spectators. Their eyes became riveted upon the faces of the chief actors, and then upon the notes as they lay, weighted by the shillings, on the table. Up to this moment it could not positively have been asserted that the man, in spite of his tantalizing declaration, was really in earnest. The spectators had indeed taken the proceedings throughout as a piece of mirthful irony carried to extremes, and had assumed that, being out of work, he was, as a consequence, out of temper with the world, and society, and his nearest kin. But with the demand and response of real cash, the jovial frivolity of the scene departed. A lurid color seemed to fill the tent and change the aspect of all there. The mirth wrinkles left the listeners' faces, and they waited with parting lips. Now, said the woman, breaking the silence, so that her low dry voice sounded quite loud, before you go further, Michael, listen to me. If you touch that money, I and this girl go with the man. Mind, it is a joke no longer. A joke? Of course it is not a joke, shouted her husband, his resentment rising at her suggestion. Take the money, the sailor takes you. That's plain enough. It has been done elsewhere, and why not here? 'Tis quite on the understanding that the young woman is willing, said the sailor blandly. Wouldn't hurt her feelings for the world. Faith, nor I, said her husband. But she is willing, provided she can have the child. She said so only the other day when I talked out. That you swear? Said the sailor to her. I do, said she, after glancing at her husband's face and seeing no repentance there. Very well, she shall have the child, and the bargain's complete, said the trusser. He took the sailor's notes and deliberately folded them, and put them with the shillings, in a high remote pocket, with an air of finality. The sailor looked at the woman and smiled. Home along, he said kindly. He little one to the more the merrier. She paused for an instant, with a close glance at him. Then dropping her eyes again, and saying nothing, she took up the child, and followed him as he made towards the door. On reaching it, she turned, and pulling off her wedding ring, flung it across the booth in the hay trusser's face. Mike, she said, I've lived with ye a couple of years, and had nothing but temper. Now I'm no more to ye, I'll try my luck elsewhere. 'Twill be better for me and Elizabeth Jane, both. So goodbye. Seizing the sailor's arm with her right hand, and mounting the little girl on her left, she went out of the tent sobbing bitterly. A stolid look of concern filled the husband's face, as if, after all, he had not quite anticipated this ending, and some of the guests laughed. Is she gone? He said. Faith, eh? She's gone clean enough, said some rustics near the door. He rose and walked to the entrance with the careful tread of one conscious of his alcoholic load. Some others followed, and they stood looking into the twilight. The difference between the peacefulness of inferior nature and the willful hostilities of mankind was very apparent at this place. In contrast with the harshness of the act just ended within the tent, was the sight of several horses crossing their necks and rubbing each other lovingly as they waited in patience to be harnessed for the homeward journey. Outside the fair, in the valleys and woods, all was quiet. The sun had recently set, and the west heaven was hung with rosy cloud, which seemed permanent, yet slowly changed. To watch it was like looking at some grand feat of stagery from a darkened auditorium. In presence of this scene after the other, there was a natural instinct to abjure man as the blot on an otherwise kindly universe, till it was remembered that all terrestrial conditions were intermittent, and that mankind might some night be innocently sleeping, when these quiet objects were raging loud. Where do the sailor live? Asked a spectator, when they had vainly gazed around. God knows that, replied the man who had seen high life. He's without doubt a stranger here. He came in about 5 minutes ago, said the furmity woman, joining the rest with her hands on her hips. And he then a stepped back, and then a looked in again. I'm not a penny the better for him. Serves the husband well be right, said the stayless vendor. Comely respectable body like her, what can a man want more? I glory in the woman's spirit. I'd ha' done it myself, odd send if I wouldn't, if a husband had behaved so to me. I'd go, and a might call, and call, till his keyhorn was raw, but I'd never come back, no, not till the great trumpet, would I? Well, the woman will be better off, said another of a more deliberative turn. Or seafaring natures be very good shelter for shorn lambs, and the man do seem to have plenty of money, which is what she's not been used to lately, by all showings. Mark me, I'll not go after her, said the trusser, returning doggedly to his seat. Let her go. If she's up to such vagaries, she must suffer for 'em. She'd no business to take the maid, 'tis my maid, and if it were the doing again, she shouldn't have her. Perhaps from some little sense of having countenanced an indefensible proceeding, perhaps because it was late, the customers thinned away from the tent shortly after this episode. The man stretched his elbows forward on the table, leant his face upon his arms, and soon began to snore. The furmity seller decided to close for the night, and after seeing the rum bottles, milk, corn, raisins, etc., that remained on hand, loaded into the cart, came to where the man reclined. She shook him, but could not wake him. As the tent was not to be struck that night, the fare continuing for 2 or 3 days, she decided to let the sleeper, who was obviously no tramp, stay where he was, and his basket with him. Extinguishing the last candle, and lowering the flap of the tent, she left it, and drove away. 2. The morning sun was streaming through the crevices of the canvas when the man awoke. A warm glow pervaded the whole atmosphere of the marquee, and a single big blue fly buzzed musically round and round it. Besides the buzz of the fly, there was not a sound. He looked about at the benches at the table supported by trestles, at his basket of tools at the stove, where the furmity had been boiled, at the empty basins, at some shed grains of wheat, at the corks which dotted the grassy floor. Among the odds and ends he discerned a little shining object, and picked it up. It was his wife's ring. A confused picture of the events of the previous evening seemed to come back to him, and he thrust his hand into his breast pocket. A rustling revealed the sailor's banknotes thrust carelessly in. This second verification of his dim memories was enough. He knew now they were not dreams. He remained seated, looking on the ground for some time. Must get out of this, as soon as I can, he said deliberately at last, with the air of one who could not catch his thoughts without pronouncing. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.